Welcome to the Thinking Fellows podcast. I'm the producer, Caleb Keith, and I'm joined by our hosts, Drs. Rod Rosenblatt, Scott Keith, and Adam Francisco. Follow these great minds as they answer pressing questions about theology, history, and apologetics. This show is brought to you by 1517 The Legacy Project, serving to proclaim the gospel to all people, especially those broken by the church. Welcome to the Thinking Fellows podcast. Today, we're continuing down our journey through our introduction to apologetics. If you've been listening for the last couple of weeks, if you're caught up with the show, we'll have done two episodes introducing apologetics. One was the first one was a basic introduction into what is apologetics, why would we do such a thing as defend the faith. And the second one was covering the basics about what are the various methodologies that apologists use, or what are the various apologetic methods. And today we're going to continue down that introductory path, and Dr. Keith's going to throw things together here about the do's and don'ts of apologetics.
Yeah, what I have in mind today is basically just getting the listener ready for what we're, I think, setting up, which is eventually just teaching people how this kind of works or can work on the street level. And I know for me, when I was first learning some of this, listening to Dr. Montgomery's Sensible Christianity, the do's and the don'ts portion of that hit me really hard. Just because I think there are so many misconceptions out there about what apologetics is and how it sort of functions in real life, in real conversation. And I think that people have sort of a misunderstanding about how much they need to know and is, you know,
Do I have to become an encyclopedia?
Right. And am I the one, am I thinking here that I'm doing the work of the Holy Spirit and all that kind of thing,
yep.
You know? So what I was thinking is I'll just throw out some of the principles out of Sensible Christianity and let you guys just roll with it. One of the things I'm finding out as we're moving from low-chi to apologetics, you guys really come alive in the apologetics. No, I didn't mean that you weren't alive.
No, your liveliness with regard to Melanchthon carried the whole thing.
So here we go. What do you think? The first one that I have here, just stealing from Dr. Montgomery a little bit, is this idea or this first principle that apologetics really needs to be gospel first and apologetics second.
Yeah, the first is simply explication of what Christianity is, and it's going to become more and more necessary as time goes on, and the West isn't even conscious of what they're leaving, let alone their kids. So part of it is simply making clear what Christianity is, and the paradigm for that is Lewis's mere Christianity, and by it he meant creedal Christianity. I think that would be fair. I don't think he'd complain. But to just what the claim is, and the ignorance of that in the West is usually due to the churches, is inestimably high.
Yeah, one of the things that I typically do on the first exam in my core theology classes have the students, usually for some bonus credit, memorize the first several verses of 1 Corinthians 15.
Sure.
And be able to write it down on the exam to some degree. You know,
sure.
That's that portion where Paul is actually defining the gospel.
Yeah, he calls it the gospel.
Right. He says, what do I mean? Well, this is what I mean, that I deliver to you what I received as first importance, that Christ died for our sins according with the Scriptures, that he was buried and that he rose again on the third day in accordance with the Scriptures, that was.
And that he was seen by many.
Right. You know, more than 500 at one time.
Yep.
All of that type of language, that you're handing that over, as Jim Nestigan would say, you're handing over those goods first.
Yeah.
Right, that you're giving that over.
And any church worth its salt should recognize that. I mean, even an Anglican should recognize that from the third from the 39 articles.
I wonder if Dave Zoll listens.
With the exception of the whole Zoll family.
Amen to that. One of the things I remember about sensible Christianity is Dr. Montgomery pointing out that a defense is always a defense of something.
Right. You can't start with it.
Right. You don't. You don't. It's not like you're walking out with, you know, your fisticuffs ready to go.
No.
You know, your
gospel first.
Yeah. Yeah.
Christianity, basic Christianity. You'll get all kinds of questions probably, but still start with what it is.
Yeah. And if it's the gospel first, when they hear it and they respond, you know, well, what about, or I don't believe this, that, then you know as a practical consideration what your context is and where you can start.
Sure.
I think, you know, Paul at Mars Hill.
Sure.
Right, when he goes and
Acts 17.
Yeah, he's up there at the Areopagus talking with Stoic and Epicurean philosophers. And he had already done his homework in the marketplace, looking at all the idols and so on.
Yeah, he was able to quote their own poets,
well,
too.
That's where I'm going. He gets up there and he quotes their own material as his starting point, because he knew that would sort of touch them or reach them.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. It reminds me, when I do the core theology class at Concordia on the first day, instead of going over the syllabus, I have them do this write down, I call it source of authorities activity, but they write down on a left-hand column the name of whatever person or thing helps drive their decision-making process in everyday life, whatever it is. It can be their mom and dad, it can be CNN, whatever, and on the right-hand side, tell why. And we go around the class, they have to say one of them. And the reason I do that is just what you said, Adam. It's kind of doing my homework, right? I need to know what's before me for the next 16 weeks in that course. And it really reveals their own literature, if you will, that what it is that drives their decision-making process. And the hope is to eventually, you know, once having shared the gospel, to already have seen sort of the objections in what their sources of authority are ahead of time, and to be able to sort of tailor the response adequately to that.
Yep.
It seems to work, and I always think of Paul on the Areopagus when I'm doing that, because it's kind of like going down and looking at all the idols, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And then noticing the one to the unknown God or the unnamed God. And I think that this idea that gospel first, handing over the goods, and apologetics second is so important. Sometimes when I teach this, I'll say, listen, this is not just gospel first, but this is gospel first, middle, and end.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
At every turn, the actual proclamation of the risen Christ for them ought to be coming out of your mouth, even as you're defending that same claim.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This isn't debate team. You're not just trying to get points.
No, yeah, yeah, absolutely. That's why that's why we're not presuppositionalists, right? That is kind of debate team style. All right. Second one I have here. Don't give people problems they don't have.
Doubtless, you've wondered about the possibility of miracles.
David Scare used to say, the gospel's offensive enough. You don't need to make it more offensive.
Right.
Yeah. Absolutely. Foolishness, let that be what characterizes secularism. Let ours be more measured, thought through. And if a person just has no resistance or complaints or questions, keep going.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if they ask about Jesus, don't start at creation.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't.
Well, first we have to talk about 7 days.
7,000 years ago.
Oh, God. Good Lord have mercy.
Yeah, this principle reminds me of when Joy and I were having those conversations with the girl named Emma last year, and most of it was apologetic in nature. And we would get together, I think it was on Tuesday nights up in my office, and we just kind of go over different questions that they had. And it was kind of, in a weird way, wonderful and hard for me on the night when she said, I think I believe this, because it was my turn to kind of stop and to not sort of keep going apologetically and all of a sudden now give her problems that she wasn't bringing to me in the first place.
Yeah.
And it's a real, it actually takes quite a bit of nuance, maybe. I don't know if that's the right, to recognize when the person that you're speaking to or with and have been probably for some times, because in my experience, apologetics on a one-on-one level is often a very drawn-out affair.
Yes.
I mean, I have a story about my great-uncle where the apologetic conversation was a 12-year conversation before he came to belief.
Yeah.
But it's really, it takes a lot of thoughtfulness to recognize when to stop.
Yeah.
And not provide something else that you then get to show you can answer.
Right. Yeah. Right. Get that. Yeah, the person in front of you, he's or she's the one who counts.
Right.
It's kind of like what you said last episode. It's, you know, somebody's life is at stake here.
Yeah.
That, you know, the best sort of, our friend Mark Pearson doesn't always get very vivacious, but when we were first both talking about teaching core theology, he said that, he goes, you know, I have a much easier time teaching core philosophy because at the end of the day, if they don't learn how to think, I guess the only, you know, the only thing or person affected is them and their temporal life here. He goes, but in theology, for God's sakes, their life is on the line.
Yep.
Yep. I thought, hell yeah, that's the way to look at this. Their life is on the line when you're doing this.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's Mark. That's the core of Mark's being. He has every individual and their salvation in front of him. He's
terrific.
He's concerned for every individual.
Oh, yeah.
That's how he thinks. They're either going to heaven or they're going to hell.
Yep.
Right? And if they're going to hell, he will do what he can.
There's a pattern, and I think I'm free to share this. Over at the Strasbourg Institute, Dr. Montgomery will find the ones who are there thinking about whether this might be true or wondering. He can sense it.
Yeah.
And you will see him in private conversation with those people more than any others. Why? For just this reason.
Yeah.
He's thinking the same way Mark is.
I went there 4 or 5 years ago. I'd never been able to go as a student. Then they invited me to come teach, which was like the great honor for me.
Sure.
And we get there, and a couple days into it, I learned from the other folks teaching that one of the guys there was an atheist author who was taking notes.
Okay.
And he came specifically because he knew this was the most robust apologetic curriculum you could do. And then I learned that Dr. Montgomery and Craig Parton were meeting with him at night for long periods of time.
Yep.
You know, at dinner to talk to him about his objections. It was, seeing that, I thought, wow. I mean, Montgomery is huge for me. He's up there. And yet he takes all this time out of his schedule to cater to that one individual who isn't actually really searching. He's looking for ammunition for his next book.
Yep.
But he's going to do what he can to address those personal things he's got going on.
Yep. So, fantastic.
For our listeners who don't know the academy that we're talking about, I believe it's called the International Academy of Apologetics, held in Strasbourg, France, every year, sponsored by John Warwick Montgomery. I think it'd be fair to say Craig Parton as well.
Sure, every year.
Every year, and I'm sure Caleb can drop the link to that in the show notes.
I most certainly can.
For years and years, they were actually trying to get students, and now I think they've maintained a waiting list for the last 2 years.
Every year it's like that.
Is it? Yeah.
It fills up very quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it fills up almost a year in advance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you got to sign up early.
Yep.
Yeah, I thought I'd sign up like this spring for this, or last spring for what was this summer, and it was you know, way full before then.
Yeah, and for those who do sign up early, there are scholarships of no small amount for the first 10 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And those are provided by other people who want to make sure that those who are really interested don't decline simply for money reasons.
Yeah.
I went in 97, and I went thanks to one of those scholarships.
Good.
Mm. Yeah. All right. Principle 3, again from John Montgomery's Sensible Christianity here, discover the real problem. And I love that he breaks this into two possible dangers. The first one is, once you discover the problem, not taking the non-Christian's problem seriously enough, right? Mm-hmm. And the second one is taking the problem too seriously.
Yeah.
So what do we think? How do we flesh that out?
Well, there are plenty of rabbit holes down which we can go. So the name of the game here is to focus in on just clarifying what it is that's the major thing standing in the way of him embracing Christ as substitute Lord and Savior. And if we're patient, they'll finally tell us. It's Socratic, you know, or it's the art of conversation.
Yeah.
And to limit ourselves to responding, first of all, just to that. Mm-hmm. You know? This it really is the art of conversation. Mm-hmm. Once you know what the one or two or three things are that are keeping him from the gospel, just do that.
Right.
And no more.
Yeah. I think you've hit it. I mean, anytime I've been in a conversation like this, what you find out quickly is that the art of listening and not over-talking or talking over somebody is crucial to this. The only way that you will, so principle three being discover the real problem, the only way that that will happen is if you are actually listening to what they're saying.
Yeah.
And not sort of assuming that you know what their issue is absolutely, and coming at them.
Right. This is very difficult for Germans.
There's, maybe you could provide a link to this. Greg Kuchel wrote a book called Tactics, but he's got a summary of it on his webpage. And that's the whole premise to his book, is getting Christians or to think about how they come off when they just launch right into a, you know, some sort of defense that that person may not even need.
Right.
You know, and it's he talks about how it's important for Christians just to ask open-ended questions that aren't critical, like critiques, you know, hidden critiques, but open-ended questions and letting the other person talk, so that as they're talking, you can learn what their objections are, their frame of reference, maybe what their epistemology is.
Yep.
And then after they've talked, then you can kind of start figuring out where the open window is, so
to
speak.
Sure. And nobody's better at it than Greg.
What's the name of the text?
Tactics.
Tactics. Yeah. Yep. All right. That will be in the show notes.
It's a real easy to read book.
Yep.
And the little article he writes that summarizes it is.
Well, on his website too, you can sign up. My daughter gets our 16-year-old daughter gets his newsletter every week. Going on the website and signing up, and he sends out sort of updated tactics, you know, more to the list sort of every week.
Yeah.
Great program.
$9 on Amazon, so very easy to get.
Yeah. Yeah, he was a guest lecturer out at Concordia
years ago. Yeah, he came in and talked to us after his little lecture, too.
He represents the best of American evangelicalism. Mm. Yeah. The best.
Yeah. I would say that as he went more and more into his methodology, it sort of seemed very heavy on shooting holes in their argument, which is fine. Like I said, there's a time and a place for that.
Yes. Yeah.
Just be careful, is all I'd say. Just be careful that you're not focusing too heavily on that rather than getting to Christ and staying on Christ.
Yeah, but if there's anything that characterizes the audio series Sensible Christianity, it's the fleshing out of how do I avoid rabbit holes and get back to the basics of them and Christ's claims.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. What do we think, Caleb? We ready for our first break?
Yeah, I think we can go ahead and move into our break. Welcome to our break. Since we're back on topic and we don't have guests to talk at the mid-break here, we are back getting you some great 15-17 products in these little breaks here. And today's show has been roughly brought to you from an outline of Sensible Christianity. And so Dr. Keith is going to talk about that. Sensible Christianity is available as in audio format. It's a series of lectures at the 1517 website. And so Dr. Keith is going to kind of introduce that and why that might be a valuable collection for you to own.
Yeah, we sell the entire Sensible Christianity audio set on MP3, downloadable, I believe. On the website. It's amazing. I mean, if our readers want a very, very thorough introduction to the task of apologetics, you will basically get about a semester's worth of lectures here. I think I just counted up. It's about, maybe not quite a semester, it's about 15, 16 hours of material in total. I mean, he starts with defending the defense of the faith, apologetics as evangelism, the purpose of apologetics, do's and don'ts, which are what we're doing today. He does some on the general existence of God, which is sort of, he'll go through the classical arguments for the existence of God there. The problem of evil, introducing the case for Christianity, the reliability of the New Testament documents, evidence for miracles. the Bible asking the question, is it the Word of God or something else, and coming up with an affirmative answer, yes, it is the Word of God, based on the evidence. Jesus Christ on the Old Testament, Jesus Christ on the New Testament, the relevance of Christ today, and that's really beautiful, because what he gets to is the universal relevance of the Christian claim.
Yeah,
the answer is Christ God, based on did he raise from the dead, and what is his promise to us and our resurrection from the dead, really answers the one problem that every person born into this world has, that is that they're going to die. Universally relevant there. And just a little bit on sort of evolution, and then sort of an apologetic for soft-minded kind of, or what to think about people who sort of lead with their feelings.
Yeah, tender-minded from William James.
Yeah. I think, too, I mean, one of the things that I use all the time in here, or reference all the time, is his sort of excursus on the problem of evil in this set is, it's outstanding. I mean, really, it's the approach that is...
And it's the number one apologetic question for Christians.
And I don't want to say atypically, but it's so sort of tender-hearted. He's so tender-hearted himself as he goes through it, too, really acknowledging sort of the struggle that people feel when their bad things, horrible things have happened to them, in their lives and their family, and that presents a real stumbling block to them. If God is all-powerful and if God is all-good, you know, how can these things happen? And he just kind of goes through it. And it's also, on the flip side of that, one of the better explanations of the Lutheran doctrine of the will, too, and what ability we really have to choose, and what he does a example of sort of pre-lapsarian, post-lapsarian, before the fall, after the fall. And it's really good. So anyway, I'd highly recommend it. It'd be very good for pastors to own, pastors who are hearing what we're doing here on apologetics and just need more. They say, I got none of this in seminary. I don't even know what you're talking about. I need something more, but I'm a little overwhelmed.
Yep.
Start with Sensible Christianity.
Yep.
Go to history, law, and Christianity, and then just keep going, and your confidence will grow every day.
Yeah. Another one that I would toss in, if your laity really lock into what Dr. Montgomery's audio lectures are in Sensible Christianity, there's another series that the church might buy for a church library again called The Defense of the Gospel Through the Ages.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's man by man, era by era, some of the greats, and what they argued. Mm-hmm. And who their opponents were and what they argued.
Mm-hmm. All right, great. So that'll be in the show notes. You can check out that. It's a great series. It'll take you a while to get through it all, but it'll supplement Thinking Fellows only being once a week.
Well, the thing that I can say with confidence is he did that series in city after city after city after city after city decades ago, and it was oriented for the laity. I can say that with confidence. If pastors wanted to come, great. But it was oriented to the laity.
Mm-hmm. Great.
If we can equip our laity to feel less overwhelmed when some of these apologetic questions are asked, and somewhere through this thing I'm going to say, most of this is knowing apologetic literature so you can give people good stuff to read and never junk. Mm-hmm. Never. Give them the best we got. Mm. And in many cases, that doesn't have to do with memorizing a whole book. It has to do with knowing that's the one that fits. Mm-hmm. It's best of breed.
All right.
So what are the rest of the ought and ought nots?
Well, the next one will take a little bit of explaining, just because it's sort of set up that way. It's always keep your goal in mind. So that kind of begs the question, what's the goal?
The goal is that we bring people to the scandal of Christ's claims and what Christianity is, avoiding other stuff if we can. If certain roadblocks have to be removed, try and remove them. But the goal is that somebody face the claims of Christ over them.
You know, when I do this, I had my daughter is a much better artist than I am, but I had her draw a picture of the sort of as my, you know, the house of faith, as it's termed here, and a road leading to that with a bunch of sort of boulders in the road with different problem of evil, this, and
yep.
I use that as a visual example to say, listen, all we're doing when we're doing apologetics is listening closely enough to identify which of these obstacles this particular person is struggling with.
Yep.
And then, two, doing our best to help them get over those obstacles, get around them.
And or to Christ.
Right, and or remove them with a bulldozer and get to Christ.
Yep.
And I mean, that's really it. That's the goal, to get, bam, to Christ as quickly as possible.
And if evidentialism is done well, even if they reject Christ and his claims, there'll be something that's eliminated from it. And the something is, I'm not becoming a Christian because I'm too smart. That gets gotten rid of.
Right.
I'm not accepting Christ because I won't.
Right. Or said another way, and sometimes I think of it, I like to think of it this way, is that, or even communicate it to the students this way, is that if you use sort of the same type of everyday reasoning that you do sort of
with various
things in your life,
yep.
you know, that this claim is unlike other religious claims, number one, and is two, more like the claims that yep. you run into every day.
Yeah, yep. and that you have to use to get along.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's the funny thing is when you're doing this with younger students, you first have to help them understand that they use reasoning for certain things every day in
yep.
the first place. I mean, really one of the I think the modern problems is how much people don't consider just think and reason and sort of work through, you know, is this building safe? Why am I willing to
Why do I get on this airplane?
Why do I get on this airplane? What's the probability of me actually making home if I get on the 405 at 5 o'clock in the evening?
Yep.
You know?
It's the same. There is no spiritual reasoning here.
Right.
It's the same reasoning you use every day.
All right. We ready for the next one?
Yeah, let's hit it.
This one's sort of a rehash, and I actually love that it's a rehash. It's just remembering that apologetics is a species of evangelism.
Yep. There are particular people who will not and even cannot consider Christ's claims until some things are dealt with. But again, the goal is that you face Christ's claims over you. That's the goal. For a yay or a nay, and we have no control over that, but it's in order to propagate the gospel in the face of somebody who says, I can't even consider that until you tell me why X or Y or Z. Those are keeping me from even hearing it. So this is simply to enable them or help them to be able to hear the claim.
Right, which is why the claim makes its way into every part of apologetics.
Yeah.
Sort of again and again.
If it's Christ-centered, it does.
Right. And I think one of the, I'd add this to the don'ts, is don't just leave the gospel proclamation for the front end. You know, put it in there at every point that you can. Just like you would in any sort of actual practical evangelism.
Sure.
Which leads us into a whole nother road of how devoid we are of evangelism, actual evangelism, and how we sort of see it, I think, as a specific task of going down to Mexico or going overseas somewhere or something like that, and don't really see it as a part of our everyday existence.
Mm-hmm.
But actually consider these two things part and parcel.
Yeah, they're not divided. They're part of the same sort of thing. And the goal is, as I said, to get them to take Christ's claim seriously.
So I guess the other opposition that I hear is that apologetics is a replacement for evangelism. And that doesn't seem right either.
No. Finally, it's going to get to Christ's claims over the individual person. If the intellectual objections are dealt with enough that he considers them removed from the road to the cross, then the message is the message of the cross. You cannot save yourself. You're going to have to be saved passively by somebody else's work. And that's the real scandalon. You know, the offense of the cross is I can't contribute nothing except sin.
Right.
What's the verse in Romans 10? Not whoever will call upon the name of the Lord will be saved. But there's another one. He who believes.
If you believe with your heart and confess with your mouth. Yeah.
Yes, that one.
Yeah.
That's what we're trying to get to. Paul in Romans 10. And it's really good news. Because as long as we're trying to do part of the saving, you got all kinds of trouble with the biblical text. If we'll turn that corner and say, I can't, I represent the problem throughout me, he's going to have to turn me because I can't turn me to that.
Yeah, Romans 10:9, that if you confess with your mouth Jesus as Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved.
Tell me that isn't good news.
Yeah, that is the news right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there are going to be all kinds of objections because that sounds too good to be true.
Mm.
Or I've gone to church for 35 years and I've never heard that before.
Yeah, where are you getting this crazy stuff?
and they're right. They have.
Right. Yeah. All right. Next one's for Adam, just because he was the rock star on our missiology episode here. So... Next one. Remember, apologetics is a species of mission work. What do you think's going on there?
Well, I mean, we said it was the last episode when I'm talking about the absence of apologetics in a lot of seminary curriculum.
Sure.
It's the intellectual side of mission work or evangelism. Apologetics is not a silver bullet. You know, it's not. It should be used as demanded. Yeah, absolutely. And there are some people who are not. They don't have intellectual objections. At least immediately, it's more of a emotional or psychological. They got psychological issues. But at some point in evangelism, when you're speaking the gospel to somebody. And they're not a Christian. They're going to have some sort of objection.
Yep.
And it might initially be psychological and all these other things, but there will be, you can almost count on it, there will be some sort of intellectual objection. And you can actually anticipate, I think it's Jim Sayer who listed out the things you can always anticipate. The problem of evil.
Yep.
Reliability of the documents.
Yep.
Things like that. And you probably... could count yourself blessed if you're in the midst of some sort of evangelistic context, if they don't have intellectual objections, because everybody does. They may be shallow, they may be really complicated, and apologetics deals especially with that. But it's not something for every context immediately. But it's a tool, if you will.
Yeah.
If you need it, you pull it out of your tool belt and use it.
Yeah, and again, this doesn't have to do with reading 1,000 books and memorizing the content of all of them. Many times it's as simple as, I know a book for what you're asking. I think I know the best book if you're willing to read it. It's short, it's clear, it's by an author who really is a Christian, and I bet it will help you. I think of all those little InterVarsity books, they're the size of playing cards, they're little monographs in print. Man, I wish we had a bunch of those.
I think Adam's going to do some of those for us, aren't you?
Oh, I think it'd be marvelous.
The
just
Islamic
marvelous.
Ones first. Mm-hmm. Got to get through those and then start hitting those.
Okay, because I'm going to put up, or Caleb and I are going to scan at least the covers of those books just to get the mind cooking. Titles like The Impossibility of Agnosticism, Dangerous Christian Books I've Read.
Great one.
Yeah, there's a whole series.
Well, we need an updated version of that one.
Whole series of those. Yeah. And it's because they were in the trenches at the universities. Mm-hmm. And Lutherans aren't. And if we don't have a better version of the gospel than they do, we don't deserve to exist.
Right.
But we do.
Right. On this idea of apologetics as a species of missions work, I always think of... this is probably just being drilled into my head from you and Montgomery, Rod, is the idea that C.S. Lewis wrote clearly and understandably to even the uneducated reader.
Yep.
And he was very good at avoiding language that
was in-house.
In-house.
Yep.
And isolated somebody from joining the conversation.
Yep.
And I think of that all the time with this. It's just, we... especially Lutherans, maybe, and probably educated Reformed too, we are so inculcated with sort of our own language, our own doctrinal language.
And the evangelical with the last things, the last time.
Right, and it just, it makes its way into our clear presentation of the gospel and our clear understanding of what the objection is, because for us, it's just like, oh, well, that's just your view of the will and the fall, and boom, they're out, right? They have no idea what we're even talking about.
Yep.
Rather than presenting a clear, plain English definition and answer to what's going on, or even a clear, plain English extrapolation of what we're talking about.
Sure. And again, this can be augmented by the best of short books. I wish Lutherans had written them. We don't. But then I'll use others. If the Lutherans aren't going to write them, then I'll use others, which somebody can read. We're going to put up some of these scans I've done from back in my days with InterVarsity from the old His magazine.
Oh, we put up a great one from you.
For instance, Paul Little, I was his TA at Trinity. He preached my ordination because I wasn't in the Missouri Synod and he could do that. But Paul wrote a little article called What Non-Christians Ask. It's 4 pages.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, is he an evangelical? Absolutely, he's an evangelical. But
a good evangelical.
Yeah. And like Greg Kochel, mm-hmm. you know, the best of. Mm-hmm. And so if our church isn't going to provide for us resources, then I'm going to go find others who do and fine-tune it.
Yeah.
But those articles from His magazine, I'm going to put up there as freebies for pastors to just take at will.
Yeah, we should.
Back to your question or your point about apologetics as a subspecies of missions, is that what mm-hmm. wording was? I know in a Muslim context, if I'm speaking with a young Muslim, probably spent time at the university, has some connection to real traditional Islam, has connections with Muslim intellectual community. I know for a fact, if I'm going to be speaking the gospel to them, I know in doing evangelism, there are going to be a certain set of objections.
Uh-huh, they're predictable.
And, yeah, it's always the reliability of the gospel. And I'm always amazed that young Muslims have paragraphs of Bart Ehrman memorized.
Oh!
To show...
That is amazing.
Yeah, and...
I've heard you say that before, and it's just shocking.
Yeah, so it, in that context, while I'm doing... I'm not a missionary, but I'm doing
mission-type
of stuff, right? And if you're not prepared for those things, you'll get your clock cleaned. They will chew you up and spit you out, because if you don't know that they're quoting Bart Ehrman, if you're not familiar with that whole apologetic context, and the superficial nature of Ehrman's claims upon analysis, then you'll be shaken.
Mm. Yeah,
because it will. I mean, you all know. I think Islam is quite silly, maybe demonic.
Yeah.
But when they make these arguments or they respond to Christianity, they've done their homework these days.
Which means we've got to do ours.
Absolutely, right. Yeah.
That leads us to last one for the day, know where you are. And again, when I do this in class, I try to be very honest with them about where I am on this, right?
Sure.
Is again, this semester, and there's part of me, I have sort of mixed feelings about all this at a Christian university, but... One of the feelings on the positive side that I have is what an amazing opportunity I have this semester in a class of 29 students where 26 of them are identifying as non-Christian in some way, shape, or form.
Yes.
Yep.
But in order for me to sort of gain their trust, I have to know where I am with this stuff, and they have to know where I am with it.
Yep.
Right? It's one thing for me to sort of lead into the apologetic claim, but I can't present it as though I'm sort of on this path still with them and in all sorts of doubt. It would sort of betray the other dudes, right? Evangelize first.
Sure.
So I have to know that. And I also have to know sort of the things that I don't know or that I don't know as well as somebody else.
One of the most intellectual answers in the intellectual world of the university is I don't know.
Right. And for me, in apologetics circles, this is all of the sort of current scientific evidence.
Sure.
I just don't know it well, and I just for where my research interests have taken me, I just don't have time for it as well. But I know where they can get it.
There you go.
Right, I know where to send them
and either, where not to.
Right, either to a person or to a book, or to both. And sure. that is central when you get into these real not as an academic discussion anymore about what's taught in class, but when you get into real conversations with people that are really doubting. You have to know where you are on this stuff, just like you just said, Adam.
And you got to have the intellectual humility to say, I don't know the answer to that question.
Right.
But maybe add on, let's look for it.
Let's look for it.
Right.
Willing to walk alongside that person, even if it's going to take 3 hours out of your day.
Yep. Right.
Sometimes you got to go to class, but maybe it's a good excuse to cancel. Probably not.
Not in the German universe.
There is a good reason in... No, okay.
No. There's always other times to do it.
The other one that has stayed with me since I first listened to this was, and I heard it from Rod too, is this idea of having the humility to read broadly and to not assume you know...
Central. Yeah.
You know... all these sort of diverse ideas without actually getting into them.
Yeah.
And in our day and age, this even means to some degree keeping up with what's going on in the world and knowing a little bit about it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe enough to not sound like an idiot when you're talking about something like, I hate to even say it, but like transgenderism or something like that. You know, just don't be an idiot with it. Just don't sort of take... the pat route that you hear without actually doing some investigation.
Yeah.
There's a synonym for added to that. I would say, don't be a jerk. I can think of other synonyms. But we don't want to lose our clean rating.
Jerk is probably better actually than idiot. I mean, don't be a jerk. Have some humility in there.
First Peter 3:15, the clause at the end says, do this with gentleness and respect.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's easy, especially coming from a very assertive theological tradition. It's easy to forget that.
Yep.
Very easy.
Yep.
It's very easy if you think you have all the right answers, and you may, but it's very easy to fall into this sort of where you're preaching at people.
Sure.
This trap of preaching at people and not letting them have a word in edgewise.
Absolutely. One of the on-the-street jokes, dark jokes, way back when I was with InterVarsity, it was from liberals. And they said, I wish I knew as much about anything as they claim to know about everything.
Oh, that's good.
Now, that had a real hook in it.
That does have a real hook in it.
You know? The phrase, I don't know, but let's look, should be familiar to us.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. The last one that was Montgomery's advice on this, which I love and is at the same time hard. I don't know if he had the... I say this way, build up a good library and be willing to loan some of it out.
Yep.
That second part is hard because oftentimes they don't come back to you.
Yep.
Sometimes it means accumulating more than one copy.
Yeah, when I was a professor, if I could get 10 copies of Lewis's The Case for Christianity, the first 57 pages of Mere Christianity, if they put those on sale once in a while, I'd buy 10 of them.
Right.
Because it's the sort of thing that somebody looks at and says, you know, I think I could read that this weekend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do the same thing. I do that. History Law and Christianity is one.
Yep.
Mere Christianity these days, just because it's, you know, it's kind of ubiquitous.
It's three books glued together by some idiot at Macmillan in London.
And these days it also means building your own personal library, or at least mental library, of good online sources that are free. You can get The Case for Christianity on YouTube, sort of in this
new, somebody else reading it
in this new chalkboard animation, and with this generation that's kind of perfect, because
great,
I send students to it all the time. But knowing that, but a lot of it is just building up your own personal library, and then doubles of some of the things, triples, whatever, of some of the things that you know you're going to be giving away.
And part of why I want to give to pastors these freebies to give away is they can give them to the whole congregation, or, you know, reprint them from a memory stick. Mm-hmm. If you need more, take them, go, use whatever you want.
All right. Are we at the end here?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the only other thing I could add to that is just an understanding that we all sort of have hang-ups, things that kind of piss us off when they come up in a conversation, and be aware of that in these, because, you know, it happens.
One time a lawyer in the congregation I served here in California described a Rotary Club presentation by a guy at Disney. And the essence of that conversation was this guy was able to spot people who were just about to explode, people on the Disney staff. He had this incredible ability to spot them before they absolutely blew their stacks, because somebody came to ask where the men's room was. And the temptation was, I told you 3,000 times, right. It's down there and to the left.
That's exactly it.
And he blows. Mm-hmm. And this guy was able to find those people and defuse them and give them some rest before they exploded on people who just come there for the first time.
Right.
And same sense
absolutely.
For us.
Absolutely. If you do this enough, there will be one of these questions that are very common that you just think is silly. And
yeah.
Just ridiculous.
And it's not.
And the temptation is to be, oh my gosh, I cannot believe I'm hearing this again.
Yes.
Yeah, you got to bite your lip.
You yes.
Bite for me, it's like, yeah. I want to laugh sometimes.
Right. Yeah. No, yeah. That's, can't do that. That's got to go.
Or go, oh, that again. You know.
Yeah. No. No,
that's roll in your eyes. Mm.
Well, especially from a Lutheran perspective, we have every reason to think this guy's life is on the line here. You quoted it earlier, Scott.
Yeah,
you know, absolutely. Life and death is on the line here.
Right.
The last thing needed is derision.
Mm-hmm. Right, absolutely. All right, now we're good.
All righty, guys. Thank you for listening as always. Don't forget to go to thinkingfellows.com to catch the show notes and subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcasting app.
And still go rate us, right?
Yeah, and still go rate us.
And tell your friends about us.
And tell your friends. Word of mouth is huge. We're growing and we're coming into our stride, and so the more our listeners help out, we just really appreciate that. All right, catch you next time.